God,
grant me serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know them.
Amen. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance today. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively. Newcomers, is there anyone here in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would like to welcome you. On Zoom, you can raise your hand and someone will chat with you. Anybody in their first 30 days?
My name is David.
Welcome. Anybody else? All right. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism by taking AA Simple Actions. This is the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. And this evening, we are going to be discussing steps 8 and 9, part 1. And everybody, please welcome our panel. We've got Ed and Nicole. All right, I'm going to read the first paragraph on page 76. And then each of our panel is going to share for a bit on each of these readings. All right, page 76. Now we need more action, without which we find that faith without works is dead. Let's look at steps 8 and 9. We have a list of all persons we have harmed and to whom we are willing to make amends. We made it when we took inventory. We subjected ourselves to a drastic self-appraisal. Now we go out to our fellows and repair the damage done in the past. We attempt to sweep away the debris which has accumulated out of our effort to live on self-will and run the show ourselves. If we haven't the will to do this, we ask until it comes. Remember, it was agreed at the beginning we would go to any lengths for victory over alcohol. Ed?
Hey, I'm Ed and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Ed.
Hey, thanks for having me. We need more action. You know, throughout this thing, I was told this is a doing program, not a thinking program. I thought a whole lot about not drinking and it never really worked all that well. Neither did my thinking really change. Thinking didn't really lead to change in thinking. You know, so in step 4, I had a lot of people I was mad at, right? I mean, lots of people were assholes to me. And it felt pretty good at the beginning until that whole part, like, what was my part? And unbeknownst to me, my sponsor was keeping a secret list of people I needed to make amends to during my 4, because I just kind of stared at the steps in front of me. And I said, okay, I'm working on my list to do step 8. And he said, oh, we already have most of it. You know. And I think the trick here is we go out to our fellows to repair the damage done in the past. This is not an I'm sorry tour, right? I said I'm sorry a whole bunch of times. I said I'm sorry, not sorry, a whole lot of times too, right? Like, I'm sorry you're mad at me, but, you know, and nobody really wanted to hear I'm sorry from me anymore. And saying I'm sorry really didn't help anybody, me or anybody else, because it was really a meaningless gesture. So it was very clearly put to me that this, it's that you go out and do this, you're clearing away your side of the street, the sweep away the debris from what's accumulated out of our effort to live on self-will. You know, a large focus was on this sweeping away the debris. If you're anything like me, I made a lot of mess, right? I left a lot of mess. And it says we attempt to sweep away the debris. This doesn't have to be perfect. We just have to make a good, honest effort at it. You know, I have to go up to person X, Y, or Z and say, hey, I messed up. I was mad at you, but that shit was really about me. You know, that was really me being selfish, me wanting something from you that you couldn't give me, me expecting something from you that I really shouldn't expect. You know, and some people are going to be like, yeah, that's great. Or some people are going to be like, yeah, I don't remember that. Or some people are going to be like, yeah, I don't care. I don't want to talk to you anymore. And that's okay, right? I'm not there for my own validation. But when I came into AA and you're like, oh, I got to make these amends. That's what it felt like, right? I needed to say I'm sorry because I needed to like be like, oh, I'm changing and look at me and I'm sober. I'm sober a month. I get a trophy. You know, I'm here to apologize to you when really I'm out to clean my side of the street. And then afterwards, try to keep it clean. That's the trick, right? Like I can tell you that I messed up, but then if I go do the same thing again the next day, it really doesn't matter all that much. But very different from saying I'm sorry, where I'm setting out with the intent that you forgive me and I feel better. When I say I messed up and I'm going to try to do better, and is there anything that I can do to make it better, sets me on a path for when I'm going that way again, it kind of ruins it for me. Right. I mean, now I've said this, I've kind of made this commitment, and now I'm trying to make this commitment. And if I do the same thing over again after trying to clean it away, think about it a little more. I may still do it. I'm not perfect. I'm very far from it. I may still do it, but maybe I don't do it as hard. You know, like maybe I don't step on their feet quite as hard. I don't know. That's all I got for that for right now.
Thanks. Nicole, alcoholic.
Hey, Nicole.
Thanks, Ed. I'm really glad to be here. And I'll have to admit that when you guys, when Amy and Dave asked about step 8 and 9, I was like, I haven't actually done a formal 8 and 9 in many years. So I started like reading it again, and like trying to prepare for my big speech. And I was like, man, I have so much work to do. So thanks. This is a very timely, especially the into action. Just thinking about like when I first got sober this time, if you've ever heard my story, you know, I struggled for a really long time. I came to meetings for like 14 or 15 years before it stuck. And I like stayed sober a couple times. And the longer I've been sober this time, the more I realized I probably didn't stay as long as I thought I did each time. I just had like a story I told myself, like, oh, I've had a year, I've had 3 years. I had a number of times, basically, is like now. Maybe I'm just older, I can't remember, but I never ever got into action. Like I always got into the room and I got into a meeting and I got new friends and I got like a sponsor by name so that I could like be a part of, because my whole life was just meant, I just wanted to be liked and accepted. And so if like even here, you could come in and be like, I have a sponsor and I believe in God. And it's like, oh, come to dinner with us. Friends again. So I was very lonely. Like I've always been very lonely. And so, you know, this is like a place where I didn't feel so lonely. And so I was like a 1-2-3 wonder. And then I, you know, would like slowly try to put some like a life back together, but it never was like trying to put a community back together or a family back together. And so I continued stepping on the toes of people extremely hard over and over again for a lot of years and letting a lot of people down. So when I did my formal like 8 and 9 the first time, and my sponsor at the time was like, your family really is this whole list right now. Like after 15 years of rehabs and near-death experiences and in and out, stealing from my mom. My mom is a single mom of 4 kids, and there was not a dollar that could be left in that purse that I wasn't going to take, you know? So that's like the action that I sprung into. And it was like a pretty drastic self-appraisal, right? And it took some time. And it really was like this line, like sweep away the debris. I remember like before I even got into a formal 8 and 9, my sponsor at the time, I had this like, my mom was turning 60 when I first got sober, and I got sober the last week of August, and my mom's 60th birthday was 2 weeks later. So I was like raw as could be going to this like 60th birthday that my brothers had spent all this time putting together. And like the non-2 week sober Nicole would have like shown up and taken the credit for, right? Like, look at this party we threw for my mom. It's like, I was of no help whatsoever. Maybe I contributed some money and helped like write an invitation, but I was of no help to this like thing that especially my brother John. And so I remember Deanna was my sponsor at the time, and she was like, you do not need to wait to start cleaning this shit up. She's like, when you get there, clean up at the party, help pick up cups, help pick up plates, cut the cake. Don't look for any recognition for doing it. Just like quietly clean up the debris. And I was like, it was really powerful. And it was like after being in the rooms for all these years, right? It was like the first time I recall feeling like I did something helpful, and that I didn't have to, more importantly, I didn't have like any amends to make that night, which was like a big deal because I always left most family events like probably needing to make some really serious amends. So that was like my beginning experience with cleaning up the debris, like long before making a formal amends or, you know, addressing the financial ramifications of what I did to my mother and my brothers. That was what I learned, was like that I could consistently be making these small improvements to the relationships in my life. So, okay, that's what I learned.
Awesome. Thank you both. All right. The next reading is also on page 76. Probably there are still some misgivings. As we look over the list of business acquaintances and friends we have heard, we may feel diffident about going to some of them on a spiritual basis. Let us be reassured. To some people, we need not and probably should not emphasize the spiritual feature on our first approach. We might prejudice them. At the moment, we are trying to put our lives in order. But this is not an end in itself. Our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. It is seldom wise to approach an individual who still smarts from our injustice to him and announce that we have gone religious. In the prize ring, this would be called leading with the chin. Why lay ourselves open to being branded fanatics or religious bores? We may feel a future opportunity to carry a beneficial message, but our man is sure to be impressed with a sincere desire to set right the wrong. He is going to be more interested in a demonstration of goodwill than our talk of spiritual discoveries.
Ed's still alcoholic. Probably still some misgivings. So this kind of leading with the religious part, that really wasn't my problem. I wasn't like Abby Thatcher, like, I found God, you know, and Bill W is like, oh God. That wasn't my problem. My problem was, you know, there was a bunch of amends that I wanted to knock out. And then there were ones that I never wanted to knock out. I couldn't get over some of the ways that we had had issues. You know, some of them were really clear. Some of the people that I hurt in somewhat trivial ways, or we got in a fight, or we shoved each other, you know, some kind of silly BS, that was really easy to cross. Even making amends to my family, can't say that I sat there and said that I was trying to be of maximum service to God, but I was. It's part of, for me, this part of doing, right? I had made this list and I knew I had to set certain things straight. And I wasn't able to do it from my rational point of view. I wasn't able to accept being able to do it on a rational point of view. I wasn't able to accept that by making these amends, they would change me as a person. Why would it change me as a person? So, you know, the easy amends, the stupid stuff that you did to your friends, you know, that was easy. Going forward, making amends, you know, Nicole alluded to making amends to your family. For me, I got sober and I had a 5 and a 3-year-old, and I had been married for 10 years to a woman who very graciously, or maybe in a silly manner, put up with a lot of my stuff and did not walk away. I'm not sure that she wasn't thinking about it, but she didn't do it. So, and this is no easy kind of thing. I can't be like, oh yeah, I prayed on it, and you know, I think, you know, I shouldn't have done that and we're good, right? Like that whole time I was drunk when I was sober when you gave birth to our son and our daughter, but then, you know, paternity leave meant, you know, party, right? I mean, dad needed to celebrate that he had his son and a daughter. It wasn't about helping my wife. She's in pain. She's waking up with them every 2 hours. Am I waking up? No. Like, and that sucks, right? I mean, I look back at it now and that really sucks. You know, making amends in a sense to people who don't know that you need to make an amends to them. My children, right? They're 5 and 3. They don't really necessarily remember the awful father that I was. But that doesn't mean that I didn't harm them. That doesn't mean I didn't harm my wife. So a lot of this you have to pray on, right? How do you make amends on that stuff? How do you make amends on stuff that's not so concrete? You know, I mean, things that are horrible, truly horrible, but distinct. One time I was holding on to my daughter, trying to get my wife a break so she could sleep, playing video games, like 15 beers in, maybe a couple shots of bourbon, just like can barely stand with my daughter in the carrier, right? My wife is like, what the fuck are you doing? She comes out and I'm like, I'm trying to get you some sleep, you know? And she's like, I can't sleep with you like this. So I go to give her my daughter, Bridget, thinking that she's being really not, you know, not so wonderful. I'm trying to be a good guy, right? You know, I'm trying to get her sleep and she's really getting on my ass. So, and I almost fall on my daughter up the stairs with her strapped to, I mean, I grabbed myself, but like, you know, 190 pounds, 10 pounds, wouldn't have ended very well. And I'm going to say that that's easier to make an amends for than for the more subtle things, than for the insidious nature of ignoring your wife, ignoring your kids, being a dad who doesn't show up, being a dad who's not paying attention, being a husband who doesn't help, being a husband who's not present, being a guy in the house that lives there that isn't actually there day after day. How do you make amends for that? That's not like a thing where it's like, hey, you know, I'm gonna fix this and There's a lot of like, yeah, okay, sure. Right. I'll see it. When I see it, I'll believe it, right? We're, I'll talk in too long, but I was 9 months sober. And I'm sitting there with my wife. My wife is in Al-Anon, and we're working a program. And I sit down and I say, you know, her responses to me are very defensive all the time because I wasn't great. I was pretty miserable to her on a regular basis. So everything out of my mouth, she takes as an offense because it used to be. And I sit down, I'm like, I'm 9 months sober. When is this going to change? And she goes, you know, about that, I was listening to a podcast and it was really awesome. It was a, you know, an alcoholic wife and a husband who was in Al-Anon. And I'm like, yeah, okay. How, what they say? And she said, you know, they were talking about it, how hard it was. And they said, it takes about 5 years for things to really change. I felt pretty comforted by that. She says, it's like, I'm sober 9 months. This hasn't been easy for me, you know, like, kind of asshole says that. You know, this has been a lifetime, kind of moving towards things and praying on, you know, maybe the amends that I continue to make with my life towards her and towards my kids, maybe they're not always the right way. Maybe I need to recalibrate. Maybe I'm not being present because of something entirely different. Surprise, alcoholics can transfer their stuff into other shit, right? Oh, I'm so busy doing this, that, or the other, right? I couldn't be there. So I find that the spiritual aspect is very important for me. I don't speak about it very much, but it definitely guides those much harder, more lifelong amends for me. Thanks.
Thanks. It was giving me so much to think about when I talked to you or listened to you. I was thinking about this first sentence. There are still some misgivings. And what's really interesting was when I started off on like the actual amends process, I was new and again, and bright eyed and like ready to fix everything. And I was really sure that I was going to stay sober this time. So I didn't feel like I had a lot of like misgivings with I call them like the big amends, right? Mom, grandma, brothers, sisters, cousins, you know, the core, the nuclear amends that I had. I had financial amends that I had to make and I felt good about those. I was really lucky. I had like a pretty good career this time when I came in and so I felt like I could manage a lot of that stuff, right? And for me, like, I have like two, alcohol, then money. They like kind of, they exist together at least in a lot of ways for me. And so I was like, oh, well, I couldn't fix with drinking. I can now fix with money, right? So I can like buy you a gift card to say, I'm sorry. look at me. And that's always kind of been like it's really, really interesting. Like when I'm trying to be the Paris Hilton of the party world, it's like, I'm drinking and like being all this stuff. And then when I'm trying to be like the successful sober girl, I think that like money and career is it, right? So it's like these have these like predefined notions of like what success looks like in either of my two lives I like to live. So I felt like I didn't have a lot of misgivings. And then it was really interesting. So we got to my dad and, I didn't grow up with my dad and I had like he was like a huge part of my fourth and fifth step. And so I went, you know, I was reading this and I didn't have the luxury of her giving me the list. She made me put big A's, an A and a huge circle around it every time someone on my resentment list actually was an amends list. So she didn't hold it back. I didn't get like a secret list at the end. I had to think about it all through sixth and seventh. Right. But this was my big misgiving. It was like I was like just really unsure. Like I haven't talked to this guy in years, right? Like I have every right to be pretty upset and resentful. And my sponsor was like, hey, we're gonna talk to her sponsor tonight before the meeting. We used to go to this like Sunday night meeting every week in Maryland. She's like, I want you to talk to her about your dad and the resentment, and let's see if we can make some progress on it. And I was on 8 and 9 at this time, right? And so we sat down and I was like, great, Beth is gonna justify that I can stay mad and I don't have to do any amends. I'm not calling this guy, I'm not writing him a letter. And she was like, you're right. You probably do have like a little bit of a right to be upset with him. She's like, but you don't have a right to treat people in the world the way you treated them because of it. And that is where my misgivings really became very evident. And I was like, oh, this is about recovery right here. Now we're really like in the meat and potatoes of this stuff. And she said, I had to make this list. And, you know, I had lots of ex-boyfriends on my resentment list, but that was not the ex-boyfriend list I was getting to make anymore. It was the how I treated them in the world list, not the why I was so mad at them list. And it was and I had to sit down and it took me a while to like sit down and really look at like this resentment with this person has caused me to treat all of one sector of the human race terribly for a long time and to treat them like they didn't have feelings or they didn't exist. Or funny, we were just talking about this before the meeting, so I guess it's coming up again. But that's how I've carried myself with men into the world, right? Is I've just been like, you don't have any feelings, only I have them, right? And clearly you don't, because look at how you've behaved. And so that to me was really where I wanted to pump the brakes. I was like, never mind, I don't need to be so spiritual. It's fine. I've told my mom I'm sorry, we're good to go. And I remember reading this like it wasn't about I needed to go on this like tour, the spiritual tour, the I'm sorry tour that you talked about, right? I didn't have to go and like find the 30 guys I treated like shit in college and tell them I was sorry. I had to like start behaving and I had to start being spiritual in nature and not just like, I didn't need to call them and be like, I found God and I don't drink anymore. So sorry. I had to like be respectful when you spoke and like listen. And for me, that started off with like with my brothers. My brothers, two out of three are married and one started having kids. And I started to like look at them through like a loving eye and like seeing how they express their feelings, like towards my mom and towards their wives and towards their kids and their friends, and like paying attention to them having like sadness or happy moments and like participating in those moments, as opposed to like being like, you know, or even when my brother got married and started having kids, like there was like this twinge of resentment, right? Like that he was gonna get to be a dad and his kids were gonna grow up with one. I had this like real opportunity to do the kind of amends I didn't realize was an amends, which was like to participate in that and like be really excited for him, like genuinely, even if I wanted to be a little bit catty, like pissed off that he was going to get to give someone the life that I thought I wanted to have. So it was really eye-opening, and it gave me, it helped me understand that I didn't have to lead with like the I found God and I'm sorry, but that I could like behave in a spiritual way. Even if I wasn't really that happy for you in the moment, I could like smile and be there for you. I'm certainly not perfect with men still, but I'm not quite as mean anymore either. Thanks.
Thank you both.
The next reading is on page 77. We don't use this as an excuse for shying away from the subject of God. When it will serve any good purpose, we are willing to renounce our convictions with tact and common sense. The question of how to approach the man we hated will arise. It may be he has done us more harm than we have done him. And though we may have acquired a better attitude toward him, we are still not too keen about admitting our faults. Nevertheless, with a person we dislike, we take the bit in our teeth. It is harder to go to an enemy than to a friend, but we find it much more beneficial to us. We go to him in a helpful and forgiving spirit, confessing our former ill feeling and expressing our regret.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. It's like one of my least favorite paragraphs. You know, like, who wants to go to the person that you really, really dislike? They say they may have done us more harm than we have done him. And though we may have acquired a better attitude towards him, we are still not too keen about admitting our faults. We all have those people, right? Like the people on your resentment list who like had like a reason to be there that like was actually a legitimate reason. Now, most of my men's list was me expecting something. And even for those, well, I must speak about my one hardest, and it took me about 2.5 years after I had begun my men's to finally get to it. It was my uncle. Growing up, my house was bananas. Family alcoholics. Many of you are familiar. My abuela, my grandma, used to conjure up stories to get us out of the house. You know, she would be like, just pop up out of nowhere and be like, oh, I'm going to take the kids for the weekend. You guys look like you need a break. You know, it's fine. And they'd be like, yeah, take them, you know, like, and those were some of the best times. You know, I learned how to love from my abuela. I had safety at her house. You know, there were a lot of things that were bad about growing up that were okay when I was over there. She got dementia, and then my mom and my uncle, the one I owed the amends to, really, man, they treated her so poorly. And I had this kind of, she protected me when I needed protecting. How do I protect her? Except I couldn't. I couldn't, you know. They were her children. I was not her child. I had no standing to protect her. Didn't stop me from trying. Didn't stop me from trying to be manipulative. Didn't stop me from getting my mom to take, you know, my well-on-well-o to doctors to have their license taken away and try to get them forced into nursing home. And like all of this crazy manipulative stuff, lying, just in, you know, the ends justify the means, right? But, you know, my uncle didn't let it happen, and he continued to milk her for money. So in the end, she did pass away. And so I'm holding on to this, right? She could have had a better last 2-3 years of her life. And this is one of the two people who stood in the way of that. And I tried my hardest. But I did some messed up stuff in the middle of that. I definitely manipulated people, places, and things. And I went crazy over it too. That's how I ended up in Al-Anon before AA, is I lost my goddamn mind doing all of this. And my wife is like, you're losing your mind. I got to do the 12 steps, still drinking. That was pretty fun. And then I came back and I needed to do them this way too, it turns out, but, he was on my amends list forever. God, it was longer than that, because he was on my amends list from when I was in Al-Anon. So finally she passed away. And I figured, well, I'm probably never going to see this man again. And we're at, in the human culture, there's this thing called a repast. Everybody gets together and eats like a fancy meal afterwards. And I went up and I said, it doesn't matter what he says to me. He can say he hates me. He can say, yeah, you should be sorry. It doesn't matter, because the way I acted in those moments was incorrect. it was improper. It hurt me and the people around me more than it helped in the end. So I had to, like they say, take the bit in your teeth. I mean, I can't say I still like this gentleman. That doesn't mean you can't make amends to them. You don't have to like all the people that you make amends to. That sounds messed up, right? It doesn't sound like it makes sense. But you don't have to. And even after that, just because you make an amends doesn't mean you need to be friends after that. This is about clearing away the mess that you made. It's the way about me clearing away the mess that I made. And I have made amends to that man. Have I talked to him since? No. I'm not trying to, because I'll probably have to make more amends if we stay in contact. I know this about myself. It's probably better that we stay away from each other. But I told him with no expectation in return that he would say that he had acted improper in any way, shape, or form, because that wasn't the purpose, right? But God, did I not want to do it, right? I mean, I knew it was going to that repast, and I was praying in the parking lot. God, am I supposed to do this now? You know, the thing they tell you, like, pray before every amends. If you hear yes, you should do it. And he's like, yeah. And I'm like, ah, really? It's like, yeah, you got to do that. You're never going to see this dude again. You got to do it. It's changed my behavior from here on forward, which is what this is all about. Trying to be a better person. When I'm not a better person, I cause destruction behind me. When I cause destruction behind me, I get miserable. I get isolated. When I cause destruction and get miserable and isolated, I'm super close to drinking again. And that's what this thing is about. Right now, I'm not thinking about having a drink, but I have these things and I leave them alone and it leads to me wanting to drink. And I'm like, well, I've been sober for a while. I can fight that until I can't. I haven't relapsed yet, but I ain't trying to relapse. I already know what precedes it. So yeah, this dude that I don't like, that I will never like. Well, you can't say ever or never, but I needed to make that amends. I needed to set that straight. And it wasn't for me. It was for me, but it was for my sobriety. And it was for me to be a more decent person to everybody else around me. Because if I sit down and I say, yeah, that was messed up, I shouldn't have done that, even though I didn't like you, I'm much less likely to do that to other people. Thanks for letting me share.
Thanks. I'll have to admit that I have somebody on my list that I still haven't made amends to, that this is how I feel. I have a former stepfather who one day, I'm sure, well, it's so funny because, like, when I was on the, I had, was working a 9, 10, 11 kind of life, and I got invited to my former stepbrother's wedding. And when I was going to the wedding, I thought, like, this is probably a good opportunity. It's probably your only opportunity because you're not going to actively seek out spending time with this guy ever again. But I skipped the opportunity. I probably wasn't willing to go to any lengths at that point, you know, in my sobriety. But what this did bring up for me was, by all rights, probably the person that I spent the longest mad at, and the person that in some ways I have a right to be mad at, was my mom, because she had made a lot of decisions over the years to put us in harm's way. And so the time before this, when I was sober, I wasn't really trying to do the 12 steps, but I was interested in a fancy therapist to help me get over stuff. And so I had worked, so I did spend like some really serious time with this therapist, working through like the childhood trauma, mom stuff, like a lot of the, you know, my mom just, she made a series of like crazy ass decisions that as a stepmom and an aunt and a just an adult now, I'm still like, I'm not sure what you were thinking. But and so without this program and, you know, a therapist and the work that I've done on a 4-step provider, I probably would still be very, very angry at her. But what I learned in the program and through some other stuff is that, like, it wasn't a, I think it says it in the 5th step, right? Like a life with these resentments, you know, what kind of life is it? And so I feel like I consciously made a decision that, like, is it worth it to stay mad? Or, like, do I want to wake up one day and my mom's 80 and can't remember anything? And this is like the relationship I've built the last 40 years, right? Like, of this resentfulness. So I took her on like a, I took her on a trip, and I did it because in therapy and in the 5th step, I figured out like that a lot of the stuff she was doing was just because she was so hurt, right? And so each decision was like to try to stop the hurt, but then it would just get worse. It was like this, she had just had this, like, maybe it was just a series of bad luck, but it was just a series of bad decisions. And it was funny because looking at my life, I was like, oh, she was just running on self-will, right? She was like, oh, if I do this, my family won't be so mad at me and the kids will have a dad and we won't be so unstable. And anyway, so I took her on a really nice trip. We went to Europe for 2 weeks. And that wasn't like the amends. I did that because I could tell, like, both my uncles and their wives like went on this, these nice like European trips and met their family in Italy. And I, like, my mom's single and she's probably going to be single for the rest of her life. And no, there's nobody's going to take her on that trip. And so I was like, I'll take her because this is probably like the only thing she probably wanted somebody, she wanted somebody to do something like this for her. And I was really nervous because I was still pretty mad at her. Like, even though I'd been sober and not mad, but like, I started having like empathy. I started like, I hate saying like feeling bad for her, but I started understanding that like, she was just in a space she couldn't get out of. And a lot of it was for like my sobriety. Like, I was like, you know, I'm not saying you have to take your mom to Europe to make amends, but as I mentioned in the beginning, I'd like to throw money at things and that helps me feel better about them. So, but I did, I took her to meet all of her cousins in Italy. And like, we spent like a week out there. And then I took her, I have some friends that had a house like in Greece. And so I took her there for a week and just, I was like, you know, this is probably all she ever wanted was someone to like really treat her nice like this, right? And like do something really nice for her. And we got to talk like a lot, right? I mean, you get to talk a lot when you're hanging out like that. And I did find out, without having to pull it out of her in like an angry way, that like she really was just trying to do what she thought was right, right? She grew up in an era where she thought like she needed to have a husband to take care of the children and like a, you know, she had to like get married in a church. And then when she got divorced, she couldn't eat the bread and drink the wine anymore. And then she was like trying to find some other way to be accepted because now she wasn't accepted in the church. And just really like life-changing to work a 4th and 5th step and then be willing to like figure out what amends was going to look like with her. And since then, you know, I mean, I realized during that trip that she also just wanted me to be her daughter, right? She didn't want to have to worry if I was like going to die in the crack house. She just wanted to like, that I also stole a lot of that from her, right? Like where I so badly wanted a mom to be like a certain kind of mom, right? Like, you know, supportive, loving mom, like all the things you think a mom's supposed to be, like she just also probably wanted her daughter to be like that too. So I don't take her on trips every year anymore to make amends, but that would be crazy. But I just try to be a daughter now, right? She like she likes going to Macy's in New York around the holidays. I hate department stores. But I carry my ass up to New York and go to Macy's with her so she can like see the Christmas tree and buy the clearance sweater, tell her friends how she got a deal on the sweater at Macy's in the basement. And she loves that, right? She loves like taking the picture on the train into New York. Like she likes that. And so I learned from this step that like even with like the amount of resentment and shaking my head at some of the things that she did, like that I can still be a good daughter and a good member of the family. And that's been really, I don't have to think a lot about anymore about all the shit. Cause it's like, we're just looking forward, right? She's not looking at the time she had to drag me out of the crack house either. So it's a two-way street. Thanks.
Thank you both. All right. I am going to, I'm gonna show you this one.
All right, also on page 77, under no condition do we criticize such a person or argue. Simply, we tell him that we will never get over drinking until we have done our utmost to straighten out the past. We are there to sweep off our side of the street, realizing that nothing worthwhile can be accomplished until we do so. Never trying to tell him what he should do. His faults are not discussed. We stick to our own. If our manner is calm, frank, and open, we will be gratified with the result. In 9 cases out of 10, the unexpected happens. Sometimes the man we are calling upon admits his own fault. So feuds of years standing melt away in an hour. Rarely do we fail to make satisfactory progress. Our former enemies sometimes praise what we are doing and wish us well. Occasionally, they will offer assistance. It should not matter. However, if someone does throw us out of his office, we have made our demonstration, done our part. It is water over the dam.
So we took our inventory and we're doing our amends. And I guess this is telling us not to take other people's inventories. But like I'm pretty good at that. You know, I mean, I can tell you what's messed up with you. Right? You see it, you got it. That's the other part, right? Before this whole amends making thing, it was I'm sorry. And a lot of the I'm sorry's were I'm sorry, but. Right? I'm sorry, but I wouldn't have gotten so drunk if you weren't an asshole. Or I'm sorry, but I wouldn't have done that if you hadn't looked at my girl. Or, you know, whatever it was, there was a but. It was somebody else's fault, even though I was saying I'm sorry. Simply tell them that we will never get over our drinking. I think the people who needed to know about my drinking did. And the people who didn't, just wasn't around them enough. The people that I was making amends to, they knew what the deal was. You know, they knew that I was part of a 12-step program. And the ones who were actually my friends were very supportive. They would try not to drink around me. You know, eventually I said, you guys can cut that out. You drink 1.5 beers. I don't understand it. You know, I don't drink like that. It's not a problem. Just please don't try to put a drink in my hand. That would be nice. They're like, yeah, no, we don't want to put a drink in your hand. You know, there was a definition of amends given to me. Again, just being so easy to confuse it with saying you're sorry. There's an agricultural definition of amends. And what it means is to amend the soil, to maybe the soil is too much acid or too much base or doesn't have enough nutrients. And what farmers will do is they'll fix that. They'll put the nutrients in, they'll put more base to, you know, get away the acid, and they make the soil so that something can grow from it, right? So what I'm doing here is I'm trying to set the stage for relationships to grow. And it doesn't have to be the person that I'm making an amends to. I am making the soil for my future relationships to grow better. Very much like Nicole was sharing, is that you're moving it forward. So my amends today, a lot of them are just how I act on a daily way. I need to tell people I'm sorry right away to stay sober. Otherwise, I nurse that shit, you know? I think about it and I think about why they did me wrong and it makes me miserable. I know I'm in a really bad place, by the way, when everybody's an asshole around me. Have you ever noticed that? Like I'll be in a somewhat spiritually unfit place, let's say. And I'll be like, you're an asshole. You're an asshole. You're an asshole. Oh my God, you are a huge asshole. You're kind of all right, but you're an asshole too. And then, but I notice in common, the one thing that's the problem is me in that situation. And then I'm already in big trouble because now I have new resentments against like 5, 6, 7 people. That's not something you can just square away and, you know, sit down in the middle of the night, write a few paragraphs and you're cool, right? Like that's revisiting all this stuff again and then kind of figuring out, hey, I'm mad at them, but in the process of being mad at them, did I do something else maybe I shouldn't have done? Answer to that is sometimes, yeah. Sometimes, yeah. And then I need to make that right too, not to get into steps further than that. But this is this whole thing, you know, the really wonderful thing about the first 9 steps is it sets the basis for what you're going to be doing for the rest of your life, right? It's just like the introduction. It's a big introduction, right? Because you got a lot of stuff to kind of clear away. But it's the beginning of kind of doing these smaller on a regular basis, not waiting 10 years of messing things up to get it squared away. And I can't stay sober unless I do this. I can't stay sober if I don't do this on a regular basis. And there's a funny part of all of it is it turns out I want to live. Like, there was a distinct moment before I came into this fellowship where I knew I was going to die if I kept drinking. And I don't know what version of it happened for all of you, but the version for me was there was no path forward with a drink in my hand where I lived. There was none. I couldn't see one. I tried to think of all of them. So I come in here and you guys tell me to do this. I don't have a drink in my hand and I'll get to live. And I say, okay, I'll do this. And I do get to live now. And I get to live better than I did when I had drinks in my hand. Like 100 times better. That didn't make any sense. I was drinking since I was 18 and in alcoholic manner. I never drank once non-alcoholically. Like I never sat down and drank 2 beers and I was like, yeah, no, that's cool. It's cool. 2.5. This wine's not that good. I'm going to stop drinking it. But now I clear away the wreckage and magically I don't have to drink. I don't feel like I have to. It's not there. The thought just isn't there. Now, am I going to say it's not there occasionally? Sure. Occasionally. Maybe something smells like something I used to like or something like that. Or maybe I'm spiritually unfit. Then I really need to get square. But when I've got my road, my side of the street clear, that thought goes away. Thanks.
Thanks.
I'll be quick because I know I'm running out of time. I just want to say that there was never a moment with a drink in my hand where I was felt like I was going to be lucky enough to die. I was like one drink away from standing on the corner holding court with the cats Like I was crossing over very quickly. I did not sleep when I drank, so I was pretty delirious and delusional, psychotic. So yeah, I was getting really close. and then I'll just piggyback on saying, yeah, the instant amends or within like the 72-hour period of behaving the way I behave is usually a great idea now. Otherwise, I also think everyone around me is an asshole. And then I know that I usually owe some amends and I should probably call my sponsor, but I'll try to go a couple more days. I'll hold out to see how unhappy I can get.
Maybe a week or two.
Week or two, yeah. That's about right. If you're new, you don't have to live like that anymore. You could try other things. Anyways, sorry, I'll let us finish the meeting.
Oh no, you're good. All right, let's think. Thank you both. That was awesome. All right. We are going to pass the seventh tradition baskets. The seventh tradition states every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their inner group, central office, local services, district area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Our common welfare, a word about safety, our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees and encourages each person here to contribute to fostering a secure and welcoming environment in which our meetings can take place. Are there any AA-related announcements? Ebony.
Hey, all, an alcoholic. My name is Ebony. On Saturday, November the 18th, we are hosting our gratitude breakfast. Wyclef Presbyterian Church, 9 a.m. to 12 p.m. 4 speakers, free food, lots of fun. Come join us. Thanks.
Awesome.
Thanks.
Thank you.
I have an announcement. December 6th, the Great Bridge 12-Step Study Group on Man Drive in Chesapeake, we're having an eating meeting. Eating starts at 6, and then we're going to have about 2 to 3 speakers. Haven't figured it out yet. We're going to go until about 8:30. Plenty of food, fellowship, fun. And if you guys are kind of looking to branch out into the wilderness of Chesapeake, we'd love to have you. Thanks.
Thank you. All righty. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group or are in need of a sponsor, please hang out after the meeting. Will all home group members please raise your hands? Nice. All right. Point out that literature is available. It's right there to my left, your right. Please see a home group member at, if you need a book, if you can hold it, it's free. Sponsorship questions. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, I will be available here after we close the meeting. Please feel free to come talk to me. And if you're shy, you can always send an email to info@simpleactions.net. Reminders. Smokers, please use the butt can provided and stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events will be posted on our website, simpleactions.net. And the meeting after the meeting, all are invited and encouraged to join us for fellowship after the meeting. It will be held at Cafe Stella, right up here on Colonial Avenue. In closing, let's thank our wonderful panel. After we close, please feel free to come up here and thank our speakers for tonight. And Travis is going to read the last two paragraphs on page 165.
Travis is an alcoholic. Travis! Provision for you. The book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for them. Abandon yourselves to God as you understand that. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit. And you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. All
right, we have a nice wave closing.
Reminds me of the old spot. All right, quick moment of silence, followed by the Lord's Prayer. Our Father, who art in heaven,
hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread. Give us trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever.
Amen.
Thank you.